The Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a smarter sports bettor with VSiN Pro subscription. For a limited time, you can sign up for just $9.99 and get full access to everything you do. That would include daily pro picks and all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our top team of handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access and pro tools like our exclusive betting split showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Don't miss out on our lowest intro price of the year. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. All right, a numbers game here on VSiN. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander. NBA draft, of course, that is quickly approaching, less than a week away. Next Thursday, we will hear names called, and markets are starting to go up a little bit more. I thought it was fascinating, though, because we talked about this yesterday, and while we were recording Hardwood Handicappers, Kelly, and while we were on the air just discussing it, there was a lot of movement in the NBA betting market when it came to the draft. And I thought it was worth at least highlighting a couple of them before we get to some of the surprising names that are starting to pop up, because now you're getting more information. And I would say that more information about now is probably going to be a little bit more accurate. But let's first talk about some of the odd shifts that we've seen when it comes to at least some of the props that have been up there for a while. First of which is, let's talk about second overall pick. So this was one that you had brought up ever, like just slowly but surely. We saw that the second overall pick odds for Brandon Miller were just moving in his direction steadily. And yet, here you go. Minus 250 was, I think, the peak price that I saw for him. As of this morning, minus 170. Again, this happened over the last 24 hours. So he's down to minus 170 to go second overall. Scoot Henderson, up to plus 110. Scoot Henderson to go third overall goes from minus 185 yesterday to minus 150. And I will say, this does come on the heels. I don't know if you listened yesterday, Kelly, but there was a podcast, Jonathan Givony and Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks. Yep. They did a podcast talk about the draft, and Jonathan Givony actually gave some more like words to the workouts over the weekend. Scoot Henderson apparently killed the workout against Charlotte for Charlotte. And Brandon Miller, he was actually there. They worked out together. Maybe not the best when it came to Brandon Miller's workout. Conditioning was an issue. But Givony still said that Miller would probably be the selection, just that the gap between them had shrunk. And on the heels of that podcast, what do you get? A shrink of the odds, right? Brandon Miller down to minus 170. The other, Amen Thompson over Asar Thompson. We've seen this climb back. Goes from minus 210 to minus 350. Again, this is over the course of the last 24 hours. And then Asar Thompson over Jairus Walker. Walker, all of a sudden, after sliding, in terms of the odds at least, is making a late push now. Asar Thompson got as high as minus 160, now minus 115. I think Walker's one of the interesting ones because, like I said, hadn't really heard anything positive or anything. He just kept sliding because everybody else was moving up. Now, all of a sudden, you know what it reminds me of? It's like the quarterbacks, except at a lesser level, which is if you looked at C.J. Stroud, for a while, what did we know? It was going to be why is his name escaping me? Wow. Bryce Young. Yeah. It was Bryce Young number one, C.J. Stroud number two. Stroud kind of slips. Everybody's like, watch out, Stroud could fall. And then right at the time we get to the draft, what happens? Stroud was right back. He was going to be the second quarterback taken. Same thing here maybe with Jairus Walker. Like, for a while, Walker was going to be like the fifth guy in that mix, whatever. He starts to slide, and now we're starting to see that snap back for Walker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting that feeling, you know, because I didn't have a great NFL draft. I'm getting that feeling for number two, number three.
Right, yep.
Right? It was, you know, for how long was it Scoot was the – I mean, at this time a year ago, we were talking about Scoot versus Wembanyama for the first overall pick, right? Like, that's what we were talking about. And then a couple months later, it was like, all right, well, Wembanyama's obviously the number one pick, but Scoot's number two right behind it. And ever since, like, the NCAA tournament, we've had this shift towards Brandon Miller. And, like, could that same thing be happening at two at three? And I'm going to probably vomit if it does.
Right.
Because I've got nice tickets on Brandon Miller, too, as do you, and Scoot three. But yeah, I think the way to read into the rest of the top 10, I know we're going to look at odds here in a sec on those, but the Thompson brothers are the key to figuring out how this order is going to go.
Yep.
And JVZ, I don't know if anybody has a real firm handle on what's going to happen with those two guys. And a lot of it, not just them, has to do with teams too, right? Yep. Team needs and team trades and a lot of these reports of teams wanting to move up. But what you get – as far as kind of like the big board, right, it's just a big board of talent. It's a lot of guards after Victor Wembanyama, right? So there's going to be teams that even though they might be the more talented players, they might fall just because teams want a more secure big men or wing player from a college, right? I think that's what you're seeing with the, you know, Hendricks of the world, the Walkers of the world, yep. You know, even Derek Lively out of Duke, right? I think there is at least a sense of comfort for going after one of these big guys, wing players, instead of one of these unknown guards, which I think there's still a little bit of a feeling of.
Yep, absolutely. So you mentioned the top 10. So we have two massive favorites to land inside of the top 10, and that is rightfully so. Anthony Black is minus 3,000 to be a top 10 selection. And this is an index prop, so it can't come in and bet the no. This is just odds to be drafted top 10. So Anthony Black at the top, minus 3,000. Taylor Hendricks, minus 2,000. I mentioned a surprising name that was tied to the Detroit Pistons in one of the most recent articles over in The Athletic. Hendricks was one of them. Taylor Hendricks is one of the names apparently being thrown around for the Detroit Pistons at number 5. I would assume it's the way that the board breaks 1 through 4, depending on what the Detroit Pistons are going to do there. But Hendricks is, I think, one of those risers. Initially, his draft position prop 9.5, now 8.5. He does seem a near certainty to be selected in the top 10. So what's interesting here is, so let's take a look overall. In no particular order, Kelly, we're talking about Wembanyama. Brandon, yeah. Go ahead.
No. That's what you have to do first before looking at this market, yep. Right?
So it's Wembanyama, Brandon Miller. It is Scoot Henderson. It is Amen Thompson. It is Cam Whitmore. In no particular order either. I would say Asar Thompson, Jairus Walker are near certainties to be top 10 picks. Would you say that?
Yes. I haven't seen Taylor Hendricks.
Yeah. And I haven't seen anything of it. So then, yeah, we're talking about what, up to 7. Let's go Taylor Hendricks. That would be 8. So really, you're trying to find wiggle room here when you're betting this on two guys. Anthony Black is probably one of them, and I think this actually strengthens it. Anthony Black's been tied to the Washington Wizards in almost every single draft. Yep. Every mock draft that you look at, every single thing. I don't think I've seen a lot of mock drafts that don't have Anthony Black in selected number 9.
And outside of that, JVC, I just haven't heard. It's another guy you haven't really heard much about, right? Yep. Like, we heard about him all throughout the college basketball season as being a lottery pick. But then we really haven't heard much in the past, I don't know, 2 months.
Yep. And I have to tell you, I don't know what you would do with this market overall. Because if that's all certain, so we essentially have 9 selections that we're pretty sure are going to be top 10 picks. So of these guys, you're essentially saying, which one's going to sneak into number 10? And if you look at it, the problem with it is that the 10th overall selection right now is the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks, by all accounts, want to shop that pick. They wanted a top 10 pick for a reason, so they could use it to go do something. Because their roster is extremely thin. They don't know what's going to happen. They want to add a piece next to Luka Doncic and what they would hope would be Kyrie Irving. So you don't really know what the selection is going to be because I don't think we know the team who's making that 10th overall pick.
Yeah. I tend to think it's that Derek Lively has a really good chance of going with that 10th spot. But to your point, I think that it's so up in the air that I almost think you need to look further down the board. And the only name I'm going to bring up here that I would maybe consider is Bilal Coulibaly, yep. the teammate of Victor Wembanyama, who has been – he's just been rising. He's been rising as his teams continue to play. That's something that Luke brought up yesterday. It's a great point where all these other guys are just doing workouts and not playing right now. You know, they've been playing – the Metropolitans have been playing up until what? It was a couple days ago?
It's worth noting, Gavoni put in his latest mock draft that the Utah Jazz, who picked number 9, did send people just last week to go give him another look while he was playing. So there's at least interest there.
I think if you're looking at these odds, I'd rather take a longer shot 5-1 price on him than, you know, Derek Lively, I think, has a good chance of going in that top 10. But again, we're really only talking about kind of one pick here. At least if you assume, you know, you assume the Thompson twins, nothing's going to happen there, right? Nobody's going to fall like crazy. If we assume we kind of know 8 to 9 names, then I think you got to go with a longer shot here.
Yep, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah, because everything
else. And he's the only one. Like, I mean, any of these other guys, though, around his odds, have you even heard of going in the top 10?
Nah, I mean, so at one point early on, Jalen Hood-Schifino was a guy that maybe could have made it in there for upside. There was a couple of mock drafts that tied the Jazz to him, but that's been gone for a while now. He's now in the mid, 12 to 14 range from what I've seen. I think that's really the only name out of all of these. It's the only name that I've seen at least at one point in some mock drafts that I've read inside of the top 10. And to your point about Grady Dick, all accounts are he's one of those that has improved his stock because of the way that his offseason has gone in terms of workouts, in terms of the way that he's met with teams and whatnot. So we'll see if that's going to be the case. Lively's going to be a good center, but it's going to be interesting to see if that's going to be worth a top 10 selection.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right, which is, I think, that is the statement about him, right? Yeah. I think, does his game translate? I don't know. I think he took like 13 threes last year and made like two of them. Yep. So, you know, what does that mean? Is that a guy that you're going to try to stretch the floor with more over time? Or no, are we just a 7'1" old school center and you can't do much beyond that? I don't know.
I do love that in Givony's latest mock draft, the whole intro is about how Scoot Henderson's still in play at number two. And then he still puts Brandon Miller at number two. I think that kind of tells you a little bit.
I read that this morning and got confused, too.
Right. Like, that's the whole lead of the article. And then it's like, nope, he's actually not moving up, though. All right, we got plenty left to get to. I'm not going to get excited. We have to talk about Ohtani really quickly when we come back. The guy was brilliant in this series against Texas. And those Angels, man, one game out of the wild card.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A lot of reasons to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. One of the reasons, you get a daily email recapping all the best bets from show hosts and guests. You also get an unlimited access to our VSiN.com picks page where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard, view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. I almost committed the cardinal sin there. I almost slipped, called it VSiN, which is when I do a lot of the guest hits. That's what I get a lot. It's Jonathan Van Tobel from VSiN.
How you doing, Van Tobel?
That's one of the things I'll never understand. It's like an O. It's an O. I don't know why you immediately go to Van. It's such a weird thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's not even the other sound
that's
the O.
That's way more odd to me than the VSiN.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. Then you just say VSiN one time to people, and they're like, oh, I get it.
Yep, I get it. It's VSiN, Sin City. I get it. Okay, so we do have – I wanted to hit on – I mentioned a pretty intriguing pitching matchup later today. It's going to go down in Arizona. The Diamondbacks have lost three straight and comes on the heels. By the way, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. Dodgers, some quotes coming out of Los Angeles that they're kind of feeling it. They've been a little shaky so far. But a good win for the Dodgers last night, game-tying grand slam, and then a walk-off later on a sack fly. So the D-backs maybe feeling some heat after losing three straight. Again, I don't think the Dodgers are ever really going to go away in that division. But they're at home today. Zach Gallen is going to get the start here for the Diamondbacks. I mentioned this is an intriguing matchup because Tristan McKenzie is going to make his third start of the season, and two starts for Tristan McKenzie on opposite sides of the spectrum. First start goes out against Minnesota, absolutely brilliant, five innings of work, just gives up one hit, strikes out 10. He was incredible in terms of what McKenzie was able to do in his first start of the season. Second start of the season, not so much. Another five innings, but seven hits, five earned runs, gave up a shot to there against the Houston Astros. We know that McKenzie is going to be very good. It's just that he had a late start to the year because of an injury, maybe a little up and down. The Astros are also pretty good. So I'm very fascinated to see what Tristan McKenzie is going to bring to the table, but even more fascinated by Zach Gallen. I don't know if we brought this up with you or if it was Femi over the weekend, and I'm sure Gil's talked about this quite a bit.
But was you and I talking about it.
Okay,
yeah.
The home road splits for Zach Gallen are incredible when you look at them. On the road this season, Zach Gallen, 5.79 ERA over 37 and a third innings of work. He's given up three home runs. He's got a 33-12 strikeout to walk ratio. At home, he's won six decisions. 0.96 ERA over seven starts. So a very stark contrast over the course of a similar amount of starts, actually. Seven starts each way, but 10 more innings pitched in those seven starts at home. So he's lasting longer in terms of his outings. A 60-7 strikeout to walk ratio for Gallen when he pitches at home.
That's not bad.
It's not. It's brilliant. And it's weird because you look at it, he's coming off of a start on the road against Detroit when 5 2/3, got nailed for five earned runs, struck out five. These home road splits have been dramatic. And I guess, do you just buy in that Gallen's just going to be the guy that we expect him to be here and that $1.47 accurately priced? This is a team, too. Kelly, I know that we talked about this last time when we were talking about the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think we brought this up just a couple of days ago, where it's interesting to watch the way the market has priced them. Again, the starting pitcher has a lot to do with it. Just earlier in the week when they got smacked around by the Philadelphia Phillies, they were what, plus 120, plus 130 at home? Against the Philadelphia Phillies, and then here they are, laying $1.47 against the Guardians with a very good pitcher. It's because Zach Gallen's on the hill. I'll be fascinated to watch Gallen coming off of that really bad start here at home coming off the bad start against the Detroit Tigers.
Wait, so going back to that conversation we had, do you think this price is still too cheap on the Diamondbacks?
I think that this is probably right where it should be.
Okay.
Maybe I would actually argue maybe getting on the verge of a little too expensive.
Okay. Yep.
Because while Gallen is dominant and he deserves it, like, I always find the home road split thing very interesting to follow because still we're only talking about 7 games. So it's still an inherently small sample size, just 7 starts for Gallen, both home and road. So 14 overall. Like the guy, essentially, put it this way. The guy that has a 570 whatever ERA on the road is still the guy that's pitching tonight. So they're like, there's something there.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like I'm really fascinated to see like what this is gonna be when he comes out here today, and especially when you get Tristan McKenzie on the hill on the other side. And speaking of, Cleveland is also one of the reasons why. Like, or McKenzie, like the arms for Cleveland are good. They have a good rotation. McKenzie's going to come around, be healthy, get stretched out, and be able to last at some of these starts. He's going to be a really big weapon for them. I still wouldn't chalk them up as dead in that division. We'll see what the trade deadline looks like. But that division as a whole is, as we know, kind of abhorrent. Both centrals are pretty bad. But like you were mentioning it in the break, like what, the Houston Astros are the biggest favorites in their division at what, -105?
Yeah. And they are the longest division favorite at -105.
Okay, all right. Sorry,
everybody else is larger odds on favorites.
Yes, there we go.
In
sorry,
every other division.
Yep. So we'll see if this is going to be, but this AL Central is going to be fascinating as we watch this thing play out, especially with teams like Cleveland there.
So I'm going to spin it to you then that way. So the Centrals I've been hearing about, these are part of my division question. Division questions for JVT.
Okay.
So both the Centrals, right? We've got Twins -215 in the AL Central, Brewers -120, obviously not huge favorites there. But, I mean, are dogs live in both of these divisions?
Oh, I would say for sure in the NL Central. I mean, because so you have, you mentioned it, the Brewers are the favorites, but they're still a half game back from the Pirates.
Yep.
You have the Cincinnati Reds, who have won 5 straight, who've got Ellie De La Cruz up, who all of a sudden you're looking around and going, dude, we're only 1 game under .500, right? Like, we could actually start to make a push here and win a terrible division because we're actually playing some relatively solid baseball and have some really good talent on this roster. I would say this one for sure. I think that there's plenty of teams that are going to be live here at a plus price.
What are your thoughts on the Cardinals specifically? Because
this
was the team a few weeks ago that everybody was like, look, the roster's great. They're off to a bad start. This is the time to jump in on them. And then what? They've gone through another, you know, kind of losing streak or losing couple weeks.
They've lost 5 straight now. The Cardinals have. They're 2-8 in their last 10. I bet them to win the National League. So, and I got them at like 21-1 or something like that. And that was when they were kind of going through that stretch, like really good stretch of baseball. But like, it's just what irritates you is like the up and down nature of the way that they lose certain games. You know, the other day against the Giants, for example, you go out there, you hit a grand slam early on to plate 4, and you're like, okay, here we go. You can get this thing done. All of a sudden, your pitching all of a sudden just kind of starts to shrivel up here. Give a bait, you end up losing that thing. Like, there's so many different ways in which they have lost, and you're also starting to get the noise now, right? Where the Cardinals are starting to come out and be like, no, don't worry. Our manager, you know, he's fine. You know, everything's good. You had a lot of noise with Marmol and, of course, Tyler O'Neill and what happened there at the beginning of the season. It just feels like this is totally non-scientific. Vibes, not good. Not good vibes with the St. Louis Cardinals. So I think that's a dead bet that I made.
Okay.
At 21-1, I think that National League ticket's dead.
Okay. All right, I'm going to throw a couple others at you. AL East, most likely team to challenge the Rays. I'm not even going to say they're going to beat them, but at least give them a run for their money. Is
guys,
there anybody there?
Oh, I thought you were going to throw at them the Baltimore Mountcastles.
No. Well, it could be the Baltimore Mountcastles, but are any of these teams going to really give the Rays a challenge down the – I mean, not down the stretch. What is it, June 16th? Come on, we got a ton of season to go.
Yeah, and they have a 5-game lead over Baltimore, 9.5. The Yankees are 9.5 back. I mean, the likely choice is Baltimore, but I just don't think that's going to be the case.
Just not a believer?
Yeah, okay. No, it's not even that. I just think the Rays are good enough that they're going to just be able to maintain their distance between them. I mean, we've seen now quite a few starts from Glasnow. Glasnow's been really freaking good since he's come back. So their starting pitching staff is going to get stronger. I still have, like, real questions in terms of what's going to happen with their bullpen. You know, as we talked about at one point, and I'll double-check the numbers right now, it still might be the case. But in terms of their relievers, the expected fielding independent for their relievers was second worst in Major League Baseball, only behind the Oakland Athletics. Let's see. Still the case right now. Oakland's got a 540 bullpen XFIP, 474 for the Tampa Bay Rays. That's going to be a little bit of a question.
Yeah,
right? As you kind of move forward, is that bullpen going to start to kind of shrivel up a little bit more? Because we're starting to see it. 401 collective ERA for them. So I think maybe there's a reality in which they start to fall back to the pack, and Baltimore maybe starts to catch them. But, we'll take the Yankees, for example. Reports indicate that they're going to take their time with Judge, and it's been what did she say yesterday?
Why would you rush him back?
Right, yeah. And what did she call him yesterday? Aaron Judge and the Judgettes. It's really a team that's heavily reliant on him in the lineup. I would say that if we're talking about division favorites, I think they're the one I have the most faith in. They're just going to keep the rest of their teams at arm's length.
I got another division, basically same question. NL West, is this a Dodgers -215 to win that division right now? Is anybody going to challenge them? Are the Diamondbacks for real? Are the Padres going to have some positive regression here, at least a little bit from what we thought they were going to do preseason, right?
Yep.
And or are the Giants for real? And they're only 4.5 back. Are they going to actually do something this year?
I think the Diamondbacks are pretty for real. I think their bullpen's really solid. Their metrics would point that out. We know that they have a dominant arm, at least at home, at the top.
At least at home.
Right, and Zach Gallen.
They are 5-1.
They are 5-1
to win
that
division.
I understand why. The Dodgers are who they are for a reason.
Right.
They're deep, and eventually some better luck in terms of availability and pitching is going to come to them. It's only two games. I still think I'm taking my shot with the D-backs, though, man. That offense is good, and that pitching staff's solid.
I like it. I can name, three players on the team, but they're my squad now. Why, JVD? Because I can watch them.
I can watch Corbin Carroll's hair flow in the wind as he's rounded the bases. That's pretty good.
Right.
All right. Now, when we come back, our guest in the studio, Paul Carr, is going to be with us. Let's talk a little international soccer, what we saw last night over at Allegiant as well between USA and Mexico.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits, bonus bets, bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 resorts properties located on the Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up BetMGM, log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense reminds you to play responsibly. Visit BetMGM for terms. Got to be 21. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, really excited to welcome in Paul Carr, who is here at the desk, Senior Director of Content, True Media Sports, does a lot of different stuff for a lot of different folks here in town, doing work for CBS, right up at the booth.
Right.
You were actually, it's funny, I totally forgot, I was driving home yesterday, and I'm driving by Allegiant, and I'm like, man, what is happening? I'm seeing a lot of people in Mexico jerseys, and then it hit me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. We got USA-Mexico today. So a 3-0 win for the Americans first off. Walk people through what happened yesterday, because it was somewhat chaotic end.
Yep.
People were surprised about a very, we won't call it quick, but an early stop in extra time last night.
Yeah, so the U.S. was up 3-0. It's a typical U.S.-Mexico game, which is very physical. A lot of handbags, as they would say in England, people pushing and shoving, 4 red cards, 2 for each side. But then what cut the game short, so a couple years ago, CONCACAF instituted a anti-discriminatory chant policy, which stemmed from generally Mexico fans yelling something when the opponents take a goal kick. It's basically a homophobic slur. And so CONCACAF instituted this multi-step policy where you pause the game, you stop the game for a few minutes, et cetera, et cetera. The last one of those is basically you can stop the game and call it. And whether directly related to that or not, CONCACAF was a little vague on it. They'd put up 12 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the second half, and they stopped it after about half that.
Yep.
Now, stoppage time is at the ref's discretion, so there's no right, wrong thing. There's no gambling angle, I don't think, here.
There were some that were trying to make it. There were still 4 minutes. Relax. Right. It's 8 minutes in, you're fine.
Right, yeah. So I don't think there's anything, there's no angle there from a betting standpoint.
Yep.
But it really was just like a mercy killing. It's like, all right, it's 3-0.
Right.
We don't need anyone else to get hurt, suspended, whatever it is. So I'm fine with that. It changed nothing unless maybe you had over 3.5.
So this is part of the CONCACAF Nations League. That was the semifinals. They get the final against Canada. First off, just general soccer question. the dynamic between USA and Mexico, I feel like that has kind of shifted a little bit in the Americans' favor. So is this something that's legitimate? Like, as we move forward, there's it seems like there's an emerging gap between the two.
Yeah. I mean, so Mexico obviously dominated this series for, I mean, up until the early 2000s at least. But since 2000, the U.S. has a winning record against Mexico. They're unbeaten in six straight games against Mexico overall, which ties the longest streak for the U.S. ever. They beat them in two finals 2 years ago. They beat them here. Mexico's just, frankly, not as good as they were 5-10 years ago. They're not as intimidating. U.S. has this young generation that is not scared and just wants to go right at you. You saw a lot of them, you know, standing up for each other and such last night. The U.S. is pretty undisputed the kings of the region right now.
Okay, I like it. So they do get Canada in the CONCACAF Nations League final. What are some early thoughts there on that? Because I've read, too, it's kind of an emerging rivalry. Yep. Like, it's kind of – the rivalry has shifted, right? It was at first to the south. Yeah. Now it's emerging to the north.
This is very much a little brother, big brother sort of thing. Yeah. And since that Canada just made their second World Cup last year. Before that, they'd only made it in 1986. But they won the qualifying in CONCACAF. They finished first. Now, finishing first and finishing third, you still qualify. There's no, like, trophy for it or anything. Mm. So it's not – they didn't win a tournament in the same sense. Canada hasn't won a CONCACAF tournament since 2000. But they've got this up-and-coming generation. They've got several, you know, young stars. They're trying to merge it with their veterans. And they're not as good 1 through 11 as the U.S. They're not as deep yet. But they're kind of where the U.S. was, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, where you're getting there. And they're the legit, probably second-best team in CONCACAF right now.
Okay.
So they talk a lot. I think they're probably a little bit better, which makes this fun. So this should be a good game. I don't expect the theatrics that you have against Mexico, but it should be a pretty competitive game, just not quite as nuts.
So what's the difference between what we're watching with the Nations League final and the Gold Cup that gets started next Saturday?
They're both CONCACAF tournaments.
Right.
Nations League basically has a group stage and then semis and final, but it's stretched over a year or two. Mm-hmm. Gold Cup is your traditional soccer tournament where everything's done in 3-4 weeks. Again, there's a group stage. There's a knockout stage. For the U.S., they'll have a different roster. This roster for Nations League is mostly European guys. For Gold Cup, it's going to be mostly MLS guys. It just has to do with getting guys a break and everything like that. U.S. will still be favored. You know, if they don't win, it's probably going to be a disappointment. And if they run into Mexico again, Mexico will have largely the same team. They're addressing this a little bit differently. They may have a different coach.
Yeah.
Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, the U.S. is going to be the favorite. Anything less than that, you know, it's in the U.S. Anything less than a win is going to be disappointing to some extent, yeah.
Really quick, so if we're looking at it, because we do have lines up for next Saturday, instead of diving into specific games, any recommendations for anybody who wants to start handicapping and getting ready for it, whether it's like rosters, availability, statistics?
For the Gold Cup?
Yeah, for the Gold Cup.
I haven't looked at the futures on it, to be honest. Yeah. But, I mean, U.S. has got to be your favorite. Canada ought to be your second favorite. You know, if there's a decent line on, say, Canada getting to the final, I think that would be a pretty reasonable thing. I'm not touching Mexico. Mm-hmm. They're just a mess. Like I said, they may change coaches in the week between this tournament and next week. And anyone beyond that is, you know, different degrees of long shot. So going against anyone but those top two, you know, Canada, you can probably get a decent price, at least to reach the final, maybe to win the whole thing. But yeah, it's U.S. or Mexico. Anything other than that, you're just kind of throwing darts.
So the other thing that is, of course, coming up, it's so funny. Like, it's such a low key busy summer, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, I'm a basketball guy. You have the FIBA World Cup actually coming up later in hoops. So, like, there's going to be a lot there. So we have the Women's World Cup coming up this summer as well. So what are we expecting in terms of the Women's World Cup? Obviously, out here, there's probably a lot of thoughts of, like, let's go, USA. Yep. They got to be the big favorite. But it doesn't seem like there's that big of a gap between them and England.
Yeah, U.S. is the favorite. Yep. But, yeah, you're looking at a plus 250-ish, give or take, depending on your book.
Yeah, for those watching, we've got them on right there.
England's not far behind them, plus 350. The story of all these top teams, these top five teams especially, they're all dealing with some level of injuries or players missing. You know, the U.S. has lost Mallory Swanson, Katerina Macario, two probable starter. Swanson's been their top scorer for the last couple years. England has lost four players from their team that won Euros last year to either injury or retirement, and they have a couple others that are on the bubble. Spain has a lot of players in and out. Germany reached the Euro finals last year and lost to England. They have injury questions as well. France has a new coach, and their players kind of quit on their old coach, and now they're back. So all these teams have these big question marks. U.S. is definitely still the best team, but it seems like every tournament, you know, that number gets a little bit shorter, or a little bit longer, I guess I should say, to win the title.
Is there anything in terms of, like, the middle range here if we're talking about, like, Australia, Sweden, Netherlands, or is there just too much of a talent discrepancy where you're probably sticking with, if you're betting anything, these top six or top five choices?
I mean, On the list, I kind of like Germany.
Okay.
You can probably find – I saw plus 750 on them elsewhere this morning. I think their midfield's especially strong. Australia, so the tournament's in Australia, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So they're at home. So that's something.
Yeah.
They've always kind of underachieved mostly on the global stage, so I'm not real excited about that. Sweden at 14-1 is interesting. Sweden is just always a thorn in everybody's side. They're like, they're good. They're never one of the top like two or three teams, but they're always right there. You know, they've finished second at the Olympics in 2016. They knocked or they beat the U.S. A couple tournaments ago. So they're always a tough out. I don't know that I'm going to pick them to win, but maybe go deep might be another option for that. And something else to keep in mind, this is a 32-team tournament for the first time. So in the group stage, your discrepancy between, we'll say, you know, the U.S. and the bottom of the group, like Vietnam, Philippines at the bottom of some of these groups, it's going to be pretty wide.
Really?
So your top teams shouldn't have much trouble getting out of the groups. Like Germany has a pretty cake group, which is part of the reason I kind of like them to go somewhere. So just keep an eye on it. Some of the groups are a little tougher than others, but I wouldn't expect, you know, any of these teams we're looking at here to not get out of the group stage. Then at least in the round of 16, and you got the knockout version.
All right, we got the third. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, JVT, for regular numbers games listeners too, Paul liking Germany is going to be a big surprise. Right. Big surprise. Yeah. Men or
shocker.
Women, right?
I think I've had a future on Germany for every men's or women's World Cup for the last, you know, 10, 15 years, it seems like, one way or the other. So, yeah, it is kind of a reflex play of sorts. But I think it's legit also, as I outlined.
So really quick, our last minute or so here, I'll just ask the general question. In these markets on game-to-game basis, is there a lot of, do you see market support for the U.S. that, like, edges on public? Like, are they a little overvalued on a match-to-match basis?
Generally, I think that works for the women. I think it works for the men.
Yep.
You know, you look like this game against Canada, U.S. is around even money to win. It's probably a little bit generous. So, yeah, on the whole, the U.S. tends to be a public team in the U.S., of course. And sometimes you even compare, like, a U.S. line versus a European line. You see that. It's not a giant gap.
Right.
But you see, you know, a few cents here and there that could make a difference. It matters.
Right. Yeah. Well, especially in a tournament like this where in the Men's World Cup, generally USA is going to be find themselves plus price underdog, whatever. These women are going to be favorites a lot of the time.
Yeah, big favorites. You have, you know, when they play some of the underdogs in the early rounds, are going to be, you know, massive goal spreads, you know, 4, 5, 6.5, because U.S. beat Thailand 13-0 last time. So I don't expect that to happen again.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not off the table against Vietnam either.
Cool. Paul Carr, hey, so what are you doing? What else? What's the plan for the rest of the day? Huh?
Today's game notes. Got to get everything done. Was going to go sit by the pool, but the weather doesn't seem to be
still raining,
playing
huh?
along right now. Yeah, so we're going to do that. Going to meet up with some people tonight, find a good place for dinner.
Cool.
Go from there.
Well, I know I'm not Gil, but thanks for coming in.
No,
appreciate
great.
It.
Good to see
I
you.
Do have like the 5 o'clock stubble, like Gil
there you
does.
Go.
Yeah, I
got
to so.
You got the jacket. Jacket like Gil.
Exactly. All right, that does it for us, the numbers game. Gil will be back on Monday, by the way. So, Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in. Have a good weekend, everybody.